and welcome to episode 64 of Role, Play, Grow, the podcast for tabletop entrepreneurs, creators, and fans. I am Courtney Stover of Lighthart Adventures, and in this podcast, we talk to the creators behind the brands and the tabletop role-play gaming space about who they are and how they are turning their passion for gaming into a career. Hello, my friends. Happy New Year. I miss y'all. That hiatus was quite long, wasn't it? What started as a short mental break to give me time to catch up turned into, oh no, my sternum and multiple ribs are fractured, and now I need a major surgery. I tried to record in the weeks leading up to the surgery, and in fact, this episode was actually recorded and intended to release in November, but editing and scheduling when I could not even sit up just proved to be a bit too much for me. My operation finally occurred the day before Thanksgiving, which was a story in and of itself. And then I just moved to a new townhouse in North Seattle during the first week of January. Let me just say that trying to move when you can't lift more than 2 pounds is not fun. Overall, I'm doing okay now. I'm on the mend. You know, definitely still got some limitations, but we are slowly getting back into the swing of things. And actually, to help with that, I have a fun announcement in that I have hired a podcast editor. Sam Atkinson is a lovely human who is now helping me, and my guests sound amazing. So please drop a comment and say hello to Sam. Also, I do realize that we are at the end of January already, but I want to take a moment to acknowledge that January 1st was the 2-year anniversary of this show. How wild is that? I could never have imagined the conversations I've had or the people I've been able to chat with since starting the show. And yeah, okay, I expected to have a few more episodes out by now, but I have to recognize that life happens, and it really happened. You know, in the last year, I have moved twice. I've had 2 major surgeries and had to recover from both of those surgeries, but y'all have been here with me through all of it. I just seriously want to say thank you for all of your support over the last 2 years. I would not have any motivation to keep doing the show if it wasn't for you guys, and I need you to know that I really appreciate you. All right, let's talk about today's guest. This episode is actually going to be the first in a short series in which I chat with some of my own project team members. What does that mean? Well, some of you may remember that last year I mentioned I am the project manager for a new indie TTRPG called Burnaway. The game is launching so soon on Kickstarter on February 7th, and I wanted to introduce you all to some of the awesome people behind the scenes. Be sure to check out the show notes for a link to the pre-launch page on Kickstarter and the Arnamental website, where you can grab an interactive story primer to get an idea of the game's setting. We do talk about it a little bit in this interview, and an upcoming episode will actually be with Jordy Morse, the game designer behind the whole thing. So be sure to look out for that. As for today, Chris Hopper is the layout and graphic designer for Burnaway, as well as for several other TTRPGs in the indie scene and professional scene. We talk about working as a freelance layout designer, working within this community, tips for working with your designers, making your games and layouts more accessible. I learned so much from Chris, and I know that y'all will too. Lastly, if this is your first time tuning into Role, Play, Grow, then welcome! This podcast is a part of Lighthart Adventures, which is a small company I co-founded with my husband. We also do blogs, one-shots, and maps that you'll find over on our website, lightheartadventures.com. This show allows me to chat with so many amazing folks across a wide spectrum of industries within the TTRPG scene. I think that is a long enough intro for now. So let's go talk with Chris. Hello, friends. I am joined today by layout artist and graphic designer, Chris Hopper. How's it going, Chris?
Hi, Courtney. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's really fun because we're actually working together, and that makes you like the first person that I'm working on a project on when I get to interview.
So. I think that's a first for me as well.
Nice. Okay, well, to kick things off, will you tell us a bit about yourself, where you're from, and how you got into gaming?
Sure. My name's Chris Hopper. I live on a farm, a little ranchette outside of Austin, Texas, about an hour outside of Austin. I've been gaming for 21 years now, and writing for games in a professional level for about 3. I fell into the publishing end of it as a late night hobby, as a thing to do while I was staying up with darling little puppies that needed bottle fed every couple of hours. And so while I was up, I was like, you know, I've got 20 years of backlog 3.5 stuff, and this website seems to want a whole lot of 5e stuff, so let's see what we can do. It's always been an outlet for me. I'm an eternal DM, and so I've been creating worlds and watching my friends dismantle them for, you know, 2 decades now.
That's so kind of them.
Oh, it's wonderful. I live for the chaos that they bring every week. We joke about it a lot, of course, but I think most of my best gaming moments are the unexpected ones. The you did what's. And so live for that moment of perpetual surprise. And I think that we do rotate DMs some, and I think that that goes for everyone at the table. Hopefully so, because I also bring the chaos.
I mean, that's the most fun part.
Right.
So you are usually the DM then?
Often. So less so in the last 7 years. I just got done with a campaign with the wonderful James Intricasso. That was a blast. He's brilliant. And then my local-ish group, no longer local because life happens, but we rotate semi-annually. We will do a 6 or 8 month campaign, and then somebody else will take a turn DMing. My turn kind of took 2 years. So, you know.
Yeah.
been a busy couple of years.
And is that mostly D&D, or are you playing other TTRPGs?
So it's been 5e lately. It's been 5e for about the last 3 or 4 years with my home group, and then 5e with James for just not quite a year now. But before that, we did Cypher System. We did a homegrown system, brilliantly named Doug RPG, because Doug wrote it. And we did all of the indie one-shots. We did Tin Candles. We did some Kids on Bikes. We've done... we haven't done Alice is Missing yet. Alice is Missing has been on our to-do list for like a year. But lots of indie pickups, just whatever we can. And if we have a bye week, we do Fiasco. Or we do something one page that we can grab. My home group is very... I'm lucky to have friends who are very interested in throwing the dice on a new story, on a new way to tell a story.
Yeah, it's definitely something I've been getting into as well, just as I've learned about the enormous variety of games that are out there. Is I've got a group that we kind of do like short, like 4 to 6 session campaigns of a bunch of different games, just kind of back to back. It's been really fun.
Yep. I love the long form story sometimes. Like I've had, well, like we did Witchlight. Witchlight was an awesome campaign for 8 months, and like we all really got into each other's characters and backstories and the interaction and everything. But yeah, I've had absolute blast in a one shot with a character that I know I'm probably not picking up again. And there's something to be said for the short, punchy episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And keeping it short, I feel, lets you try a lot more games too.
Mm-hmm.
We're always limited on time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would love to dive in a little bit more into you started publishing because you had some time while you were taking care of puppies.
Yeah.
But just walk me through, you know, those like initial days of like getting into this industry into where you are now.
Sure. So by day, I worked first for a sign company and then now for an education company. In Creative Suite, I've been immersed in Illustrator, InDesign, and Photoshop for 12, 15 years now. And so it was an easy reason for me to cough up that Adobe money. Be like, look, I'm going to make it back. And so for me, it was partially a reason to sharpen those skills that I wasn't using as much in my day job, because I'm in kind of more of a managerial role now and also more of a web programming aspect. And so I was like, you know, I can get my Illustrator and I can get my InDesign chops back up. And I have a reason to carry this subscription. I have a reason to be doing this on my own. And so from that, it became quickly apparent that some of the stuff that makes a polished book and some of the shortcuts used by designers was something that I could draw on to create original feeling work and stuff that's not just 5e watermarks in a web publisher. Like I really enjoy being able to evoke the sense of a product in its visual design. And that was something that early on, I was working with Ryan with Realm Warp Media and doing Arthurian stuff. And so it's a pseudo-historical setting, and so I'm doing Celtic stuff and Fae stuff and Saxon stuff and all of these really strong visual design elements that I could play toward. And so that feeds my creative side when my regular life isn't necessarily. And yeah, it may have also been sleep deprivation.
Yeah. So these days you are doing layout design, you're doing accessibility consulting, graphic design. What else?
What else? Writing. I am honored and privileged to be writing for MCDM's Flea Mortals. Just submitted a handful of monsters, waiting patiently for the playtesters to tear them to bits and publicly post about it whenever that packet drops. So it's remarkable to watch MCDM hand these things to people in real time and build these neat little packets. And then, you know, there are hundreds of fans just run them. And, oh, that monster that you built, it totally wiped half my party until the wizard saved the day. It's that same kind of experience that you get at your table with hundreds of strangers. And so that's, I cannot wait for the day that somebody tells me that, you know, my CR is too low on that or something like that. And so, yeah, I'm writing for MCDM's Flea Mortals. I do some Kickstarter graphics, usually as part of a layout that I'm doing, because if I've got the layout assets, then I've got Kickstarter assets. It's just a matter of cutting and cropping and moving around. And so right now, Underground Oracle is running a Kickstarter, a 2-week Kickstarter. And I got the graphics together for that. I also did the layout for that one. And yeah, just keep them busy.
Yeah, definitely. So one thing I definitely want to dive into more is just being a freelance layout artist. Like, how did you start? Like, how did you get your first gig?
My very first gig was with Domel of Domel's Wondrous Maps. She was running a Discord, Domel's Wondrous Works, Domel W on Twitter. She was running a Discord for creatives, but then also kind of just for fun. And it was a group of people that were talking about putting together this list of lists, this book of roll tables for everything. And that fed my meta. I was like, yes, absolutely. A roll table of roll tables sounds exactly the kind of absurd that I love to bring to a table. And so I didn't know the first thing about the industry. I had just been eyeballing, throwing some stuff online, but they let me write, and it was largely communal. We would do write-ins together. We'd chat about what we were creating. We'd huddle around the proverbial campfire to create this thing. And that fed the creative in me, but it also fed a collaboration that I hadn't really had since I was making worlds up with my friends in high school. Typically, even with my weekly group, whether I'm playing or DMing, typically there's the anticipation of the gaming session. And there might be some chat back and forth, but then it's pretty quiet until it's game time. Working with Domel and working with some of the DMs Guild creators, there was this energy of everybody putting in what they could when they could to make something better than any of us could on our own. And that's addictive. That pulled me in and roped me in. And I mean, from there I was off to the races. I talked Ryan at Realm Warp into letting me do entire volumes because I just loved this particular aspect of his world so much. And then I worked with Spin, and I worked with a handful of other creators doing the kind of big compilations that you see on DM's Guild, you know, books of archetypes, weekly adventure magazines, stuff like that. And I started as a writer in a lot of the early things because it was easier to be a contributor and because I wanted to pay for that Adobe subscription. And so once I had a few titles under my belt on DM's Guild and DriveThruRPG, then I looked back toward growing my skill set, leaning back into my design stuff from before. And also at that point, I'd had the advantage of looking at, you know, a dozen books that I'd helped create. And so really kind of developing that eye for, here's what 5e's doing that's cool, and that's fine and all, but here's what Blades is doing that's cool. Or here's Mork Borg, to, you know, point to the elephant in the room. Like, the levels of design happening in the tabletop community feed each other in a kind of conversation. It's not all 2-column 10-point font on fake papyrus with some watercolor. And sometimes it is, and that's great, because again, it's a conversation. Like, you're telling people, this is a 5e product. You can expect this to be as good as those 5e products that you're forking over $30, $40, $50 for in hardcover. But then you can also tell people, this is a crazy street-level cyberpunk adventure, and design accordingly. And so that feeds me. That's another thing. That's the visual design. That conversation where you're working within somebody's text. And so once I was able to enter into that conversation, once I was creating for DM's Guild, and once I was able to sharpen my Photoshop skills back up, then it was, like I said, it was off to the races. Then it was very much a thing that I do now. A thing that I did now, a thing that I do now. A schedule in my week.
Yeah. So I, as a project manager, always want to know all of the processes. So I would love to know, like, what your design process is. And I feel like since I'm supposed to be saying, oh, hey, Burnaway, if you have examples, you can talk about, like, Burnaway is a good example.
Burnaway. Yeah. Yeah. So Burnaway is a good example because that logo is definitely still in progress. I actually love the logo that graphic designer did. It's so clean and sharp, and I want to muddy it up with weird overlays and textures. Burnaway is a great example of one of those conversations that I get to talk about because it's got such a rich theme. It immediately invokes Fahrenheit 451 and Bradbury, but also kind of nearer fictions, things like Firestarter and Supernatural, and kind of that, I don't even know if we get to call it retro anymore, that cool that never was actually as cool as we have made it now. I think that there's a real niche in Burnaway that I'm enjoying burrowing into. And so how I do that is rapid consumption of media. So looking at these pieces that I'm drawing inspiration for from mood boarding, staring off into space and doodling, all of the art aspects of it, to think about what we're saying that lines up with those pieces of media that other people might be familiar with, and what we're saying that's new and different from them. So for example, like, we're kind of doing Ghostbusters here a little bit, right? We're capturing and dealing with ember ghasts, and we're struggling with these very tight boxed clocked events in a way that evokes the structure of a movie or a plot. And so it's a very tight, compact experience. And so I want the presentation to match that as well. And so you can actually build tension with the way that your lettering is designed, and you can keep this forward motion with the way that you lay out that page. I love that we're going to the smaller format, because that gives you a direction to push. And so we're releasing this book in a 6x9, which means we have a lot of room to move around within a single column. It's not densely packed 10-point font. It's something that we can use to push the reader along to the next page, to push the player into that next scene, and to push the DM into these tense moments, and then use visual bursts to enhance that for everyone. And so the process of stepping through that, I said already, the consumption of media and the reflecting on media, and then taking the drafts and taking the documents, looking for natural breakpoints, and then, you know, doing the actual physical layout. But then within that physical layout, looking at opportunities to drive those experiences. One of the things that I never really thought about as a teenager or college student or early in tabletop career is that running a game for your friends is a technical experience. It's an execution that you are relying on your knowledge of the piece for. But prepping for it and winding up for it and getting excited about it and learning the setting and immersion is a DM reader experience as well. And Burn Away has some unique reader experiences that I'm really chewing on. I'm really excited to be handing somebody this book that says, this is a weird, weird place with terrifying singular experiences. Jump in. So that's still kind of a roundabout way of answering your question about the process. To bullet point that and to attempt to bullet point that for the third time, to bullet point that, alignment with like media, reflection on intent, looking at those key points in the theme and how we interact with them, reviewing and analyzing the text and how it relates to those first two points, and then playing, and then tweaking and having fun and moving around that motion on the page.
So I know that then, like, at least for our case, and I'm assuming that you do this with other projects too, that you do this, you get to play around with a couple of different ideas and submit those for feedback. Like, do you have a certain number of templates you try to do, or is it just super dependent on the project?
So it's definitely dependent on the project. Typically, I'll do a sample sheet that includes all of your headers and your text and your information. I'll do a few of those for myself as well as for the client. And so font pairing, like food or wine, like there's patterns that you follow, and there's structures that you can move within. And so, like, I'll have a set of font pairs that I know if I'm going to do DM callouts in Courier, that I'm not going to use Arial in the body, stuff like that. So I'll have kind of a predefined set of do's and don'ts that I'm circling around, but then I'll provide the client with a number, usually like 3 to 5, a number of samples where we're trying as broadly as possible across those different themes. So, like, one might lean a little bit more into that 80s feel. The other one might be a little bit more contemporary, gritty, down to earth, street level, Jessica Jonesy. The third one, I'm thinking Burn Away here, the third one would kick further back and look 60s, 70s toward stuff like Firestarter and Clockwork Orange, and deeper into the weird. probably in the case, again, in our case, playing with something a little bit grungier in the 90s aesthetic version of grungier, playing with something that looks like the book got kicked down the pavement a few times or escaped a burning building. The visual, starting with a broad sampling of different visual feels to nail down where we think we're heading, kind of like we did with the logo and kind of like indirectly like we're doing with the art. We have some very different art styles, but they're all coming together to kind of form an identity between them. Same type of refinement.
For the sake of our listeners, we've got a lot of different art pieces now at various stages of completion, since, you know, need to actually fund the game before we can finish all of the art. But it has been really cool and interesting just to see it all come together, because you're right, like, they are very different art styles, and yet the more that we get, like, the more it seems to mesh.
And I do think that that is partly due to the team's vision of this setting. I think that Burnaway evokes, it's not exactly a memory, it evokes a very specific tone and experience within its, within what I've read of its text and wrapping. It does a really good job of setting that expectation, of locking in the kind of what's creating the pressure, what the solution's going to be, and where the struggle is. I think that having the wrapper of a burning building or of a, you know, giant configuration, I keep coming back around to Blade's clocks. It locks in that tightness on the experience that I think is compelling.
I think it's going to be a really, really cool game. I mean, it's already cool, but just once we get to the finish line, I'm going to be pretty excited. Hey, entrepreneurs. I love introducing you to new creators every episode, but I could really use your support. I would love to invite you to join our Patreon page, where you'll gain access to behind-the-scenes content, add your questions to upcoming interviews, and you could even receive a shout-out on our site in an upcoming episode. To learn more, go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. And now, back to the show. So, just going back, I guess, to our, like, general layout design, one thing I am very curious about is, like, what are some things that you want your, like, the writers that you're working with to know before? Like, maybe if you could tell them something like right at the beginning of a project, like, what would be some helpful things that they could build into their drafts that would help you as the layout designer?
Please just press enter once. It is very important to have a clean template. Custom formatting is just getting stripped out anyway. And so just letting your paragraphs flow. If there needs to be a space between paragraphs, that's going to get set in the styles. Using your right H1, H2, H3, not jumping from H1 to H4. Spacing and delineation, just that's the number one thing. Is I know that other people in the industry specifically charge cleanup fees because it can be such a front load on the manuscript, and nobody wants to hear, hey, we're ready to start layout, okay, this is going to take a week to get ready. You know, and so yes, clean, keep a nice clean tidy template and let the formatting happen in there. Second would be, not just for writers, but for everyone in the group, including the layout artist, communication. Hey, this is going to be weird. Hey, this call out box needs to be on its own page. Hey, make sure this, that, or the other stays together. I mean, everyone that I've worked with pretty much paints their Google Docs, or I've got one client that I'm privileged enough to be in Basecamp. And he uses Basecamp like you would in a technical document, in a technical project. There is no such thing as too much information when you're managing a text. So those open lines, man. I think you've mentioned before you have a project management background, right?
Yeah, I do.
So I know you've experienced that kind of Basecamp project management oriented thing. Depending on the scale of the project, and this is not whatever the verbal equivalent of a subtweet is. This is not directed at anyone in particular, but depending on the scale of the project, a good project manager or a good editor with a background in project management is worth more than most of the rest of us here combined. So much hinges on the clear communication of expectation, but also the turn and pivot when those expectations aren't met. You know, so sometimes I need the reminder, hey, this is like way overdue. We need this now. Sometimes I need to be able to come to you and be like, I'm not sure. And I'm saying you, the project manager, and be like, I'm not sure. not sure about this, that, or the other. And so facilitating that communication is huge. That's, I think, a huge part of any project. Sorry, that's to circle around and say, writers hire project managers. If you think you're going to make this project on your own, I promise you, you're not. So, yeah.
I mean, I appreciate that sentiment, but yes, I would say I agree.
That's all. One project manager to another.
Yes. So what are some common mistakes that you see in, you know, maybe someone is like, oh, I can, like, I don't need to hire a layout designer. I can just do it on my own. And they don't have any idea what they're doing. Like, are there any common, like, themes that you can see on, like, wow, that's a really bad design?
So part of the reason I swung back over to layout was because I didn't see accessibility and even like visual accessibility, readability things happening. And so for me, accessibility compliance in the sense of a PDF that works in a screen reader, that has accurate alt text, that can be busted apart and read into a EPUB or anything else, is huge. And that's something that doesn't happen in a lot of places. And it doesn't happen in a hobby industry, because certain layout programs, not Adobe, aren't capable of producing that kind of PDF. And so, you know, if this is a weekend thing that you're doing for fun, fine, that's a concession to your audience. But I feel like if you're going to label yourself as any kind of a publisher, you have a responsibility to make your published content accessible. And so luckily I've been privileged to work with people of that same line of thought. And it's just, that's something where if you're not in Adobe and you're just making stuff to make stuff, okay. If you have access to Adobe, if you're creating an InDesign, there's really no excuse for missing the basics other than not knowing them. And so I've tried, and I'm putting it out here on a podcast, I'm always available to help people learn basic accessibility, learn how to make your articles flow in a way that a screen reader can read, learn how to label your components correctly, learn how to put in that alt text, because that's something to me that's not something I'm doing for the money. That's something that we as creators have a responsibility to our audience, because nothing's worse than having an imposed barrier that we could easily remove with a little bit of technical skill. So that's my soapbox. If you're creating, create something for everyone.
Well, you know, I was planning on asking you next about how you consult for accessibility. So I actually want to go right into it, your soapbox.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, that is my soapbox. Okay, so at a base level, what happens is I receive a PDF and I put it through a number of tests. The first round of these tests is right in Acrobat Pro. You can go over to Acrobat Pro's accessibility tools, do a little accessibility report, and it'll spit out a whole lot of red text of everything that's wrong with your PDF. Congratulations. And now the work starts, right? I posted a big old thread on Twitter for people that want to refer back to this, because I'll just blitz through it real quick here. But my pinned tweet as of right now is an in-depth look at this too. But basically, using either Acrobat Pro's tools or there's some third-party tools that are out there. And then, of course, nothing's better than actually putting it through screen readers. We'll get to that in a minute. I go through and I review the PDF. I generate a report of all the work that needs done, which is usually writing alt text, rearranging components, and then kind of a visual flow. One thing that I do, if depending on the client and if it's possible up front, is then I'll also create a high contrast black and white version for people who struggle with color blindness or other visibility oriented things. But a high contrast version, put it through the ringer on the different versions, and then I just use the tools in Adobe to generate a screen reader friendly PDF. Now, visual impairment is not the entirety of accessibility. It's just that when we're in a visual medium, that's kind of the first logical step. From there, it varies greatly based on the target audience and what we're creating. And so I have in the past worked with Lexile scores to work on readability. I've also worked with consultants to understand the actual math and conceptualization to make sure that it reaches a younger audience well, or people who suffer from dyscalculia or things like that. Those details vary, again, kind of based on what the client's individual needs are. But in general, my role is to make something and make a PDF specifically that is screen reader friendly, that can be parsed into HTML. And that's important because different devices may have, you know, scaling or read in differently. Along with that, putting stuff into EPUB, if I can get things into EPUB, that quadruples your audience as far as people that can open this document and navigate this document. EPUBs can be read by Braille readers and by you know, big screen Kindles, Paperwhite. That's the old style. There's certain Kindles, they're like a Paperwhite. They're again super high contrast devices. Things of that nature. And then at the end of the day, it also helps other consumers as well, because it cleans up the document and it makes it more navigable. It makes your bookmarks and your click-throughs and things like that work. In creating a PDF that works on an accessibility level, I'm also usually making something that's better for all consumers. I don't know if that answered your question entirely.
No, it did. It did. Like, it's interesting because I know about making sure that it can be on a screen reader, and I know about adding alt text to images. Although, to be completely honest, that's only because of Twitter, and that's only in the last year. Like, so what's just interesting is hearing about all of the additional things sure. that you do that, like, I wasn't even aware that that was a thing, but I'm like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. Like, oh yeah.
It was actually Twitter that clued me into, maybe I should look at this closer for tabletop as well, because there were a couple of Twitter users who had mentioned wanting blind accessible products, wanting some particular products in a reader acceptable format. And I had this light bulb moment of, why aren't they? Why wouldn't they be? Like, that's settings in InDesign. We can do that. And so, yeah, it was also Twitter that clued me in on, this is something that isn't as broadly distributed as it could be.
Mm-hmm. I, for one, am really glad that you've kind of specialize in this now. And I hope it becomes more mainstream and just becomes like the standard.
Of all the things that I'm doing in tabletop, I think that that's the thing that I'm the most proud of, for sure. So much of any work, if it's a benefit to somebody that otherwise couldn't access something, like I said earlier, removing those barriers, that's important to me.
Okay. Well, one thing that I do want to make sure I have some time to ask you about is that it's kind of a two-part question. And the first part is that I like to acknowledge that while we do these things because we love them, like working freelance on all these projects is super fun, but it can also be really, really hard. So what are some challenges that you have had to face over the last couple of years of working on these things?
Oh, I think it took me 2 years to learn how to say no, and I'm still not great at it. Time management. We were talking about project managing earlier. It's always easy to manage somebody else's time. It's always a little more difficult to manage my own. I have had to, especially in the last year, get a little bit more guarded with my time. I'm not doing this full time. This is still the side hustle. And sometimes those side numbers add up to full numbers, you know? And so in the interest of not having 80 plus hour weeks, I've had to step back and really think about, can I commit to this? And also, you know, is there somebody better suited? Getting into a community of creators, you always have people that you look toward and that you look up to and that you admire. And it's easy to forget to say, okay, I can't, but this person over there is remarkable. You should see their work in this other book. And that's something that I've been trying to use my voice for a little bit more this year is, look, either you don't actually need my help, you need somebody that's more in this, that, or the other. I know this amazing person, or I can't commit to that right now, but believe me, they're actually better at this over here. And so being able to direct clients that I can't take on for whatever reason to other brilliant creators is a huge skill that I think I'm still developing the network, and I am definitely still finding the humility.
Yeah, I know time management is definitely a struggle when you're working a full-time job and you have your personal life and all of your other projects. Like, is there anything that has helped you kind of find a balance?
I am a huge advocate of bullet journaling. It sounds so silly. I know everyone had bullet journals like 5 years ago, but I am a rituals person. I have to sit down and map and plan. And even if it goes out the window anyway, I made my map and I know where it went out the window. Sunday afternoons are my personal burn down meeting. They're where I sit down and I map out, okay, here's what I didn't get done during the week, and here's what I definitely have to get done this next week. And then throughout the week, it's just a matter of saying, tomorrow's Thursday, I definitely have to make sure that I get those sample pages by then. And checking each afternoon around what I'm doing after my day job is completed and after dinner and the house is settling into that witching hour that we all live in.
No, I really like that. Like, I'm still very much a paper agenda. Like, even though I have all of these other project management tools, there's just something about the ritual of writing down what I need to do that makes me stick to it so much more.
I have tried Trello boards on the screen 2 or 3 times because, like, I have a physical Trello board right here. It's the same thing, but no, same way. There's something about the physical process of writing it down. I blame the first 16 years of our lives.
So, <True.
laughs> yeah.
So going back to our two-part question, the second part is, while yes, things can be a struggle and having to learn how to say no is always hard for, I know I'm an achiever, but instead, when you look back over the last couple of years of working in this space, what would you say has been the best part? What's been super rewarding?
Oh my gosh. I think lately, and I'm going to say this last year, because there's been rewarding moments in the past. Having your first physical book in hand is a singular experience. But especially this past year, the dynamic support I've gotten from the MCDM team has been phenomenal. And what I mean by that is that I'm working with Hannah Rose and James Entrecasso as editors. They're in a transition at Arcadia. Hannah just came in. And each issue is a conversation. There's this dialogue that happens around this amazing thing that's been made and all the supports that we want to put in for it and making absolutely sure it's right before it goes out to as many people as possible. And that's something that is measurable in every ounce of conversation. There's this absolute push to be the best, not because of pride or ego or my setting, but because this is something that thousands of people are out there anticipating next week. And I know that I work under that kind of pressure well. I did journalism stuff a little bit in college and the sign publishing stuff too. Like, pressure feeds me, but community around pressure and pressure is not even the right word for it at that point. Community directed structures and deadlines and deliverables where everybody is as enthusiastic about that end product as the people are to receive it is huge. And so the process of working with MCDM and working with Arcadia Magazine has been hugely rewarding as an experience in publishing. It does feel a lot like some fond memories of busy times in the past.
Yeah, that does sound really special. So before we wind down, I do want to give you the chance to talk about any upcoming projects that we haven't mentioned yet that you're working on, you're excited about, and you're allowed to talk about.
So I'm excited to be winding down the successful Under the Harvest Moons Kickstarter for Underground Oracle. We're crushing through stretch goals. I am looking forward to them just wrapping up this first Kickstarter and looking toward 2023 and all of the growth that Underground Oracle deserves and earns and continues into that. And I am ramping up for a presentation at South by Southwest EDU. I'm going to be managing a panel where we'll discuss tabletop RPGs in the classroom for all ages. And we have our presenters range across all ages. They've used tabletop stuff from preschool and elementary up through high school and college. Also going to be running fulfillment on Magi Knights, which is an anime-inspired 5e book that kickstarted a few weeks prior, a couple months prior, I guess now. But looking forward to bringing it to life and dropping it in the store, along with more exciting things from MCDM and the other publishers that I'm lucky enough to work with on a regular basis.
You do have a lot going on.
Keeping busy.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Chris, if people want to find
you... the Magnolia Bestiary. And the Magnolia Bestiary.
All right.
So, that's good. Yep.
Awesome. Well, Chris, if people want to find you and find all of the projects and things that you're working on, where should they go?
It's easiest to follow me on Twitter at ChrisHopper2. Because that first guy beat me and we haven't had the Highlander fight yet.
Perfect. And that is the number 2, not spelled out, correct?
Right. Yep.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you again so much for coming on today. We're going to wrap up this part of the recording. And then for any of our newer listeners, we do jump into something fun right after this, where we are going to do a quick question blitz that is exclusive to patrons. So going to ask you 10 questions. Some of them are gaming related. Some of them are not, but it's going to be fast, silly, and going to be a good time. But thank you so much for coming on. This has been super fun.
Thank you for having me, Courtney. It's been a blast.
You just finished another episode of Role, Play, Grow. To check out the show notes and transcript from today's episode, you can go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. To keep up with every episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice. And if you're enjoying the show, I would absolutely love if you would leave me a review and share this episode with your friends. Your review might even get featured on an upcoming episode. To follow me on Twitter, you can either find me at LightheartADV for our business account, or at KetraRPG for tweets on gaming, my dog Bowser, and other random shenanigans. You can also find me on Patreon at Role, Play, Grow. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time on Role, Play, Grow.